From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 17th day of June 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. And along the way, we'll hear a report from Arizona, where a University of Illinois professor was demonstrating an agricultural robot. That with Tony St. James. He's with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Stay with us for the whole hour, because in the second half hour, Commodity Week comes up. We'll talk about Brexit. That's right, Brexit on Commodity Week with Pete Manhart, Chip Nellinger, Wayne Nelson, and Darren Newsom of DTN, the Progressive Farmer, right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. July corn up 12.5 cents today at $4.37¾. September $4.42¾, 12¼ higher. December up 13. That's the new crop at $4.48¾. March 11¾ higher at $4.52½. May up 11, and July of next year up a dime. Soy complex, July beans 25 higher, $11.59½. The August up 26½ at $11.60. November beans 11.48¼ up 29. January up 29 at 11.46. March up 23¾. May up 20½. July up 19 cents. Bean oil 77 cents higher. Bean meal up $9.70. Soft red winter wheat up 8¾ at $4.81¼. September at $4.94¾. A dime higher. December contract there up 8¾. The hard red July up 10 cents at $4.60¾. December at $5.02¾. A gain of 9 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the June at $116.55, down 72½ cents. August 85 cents lower. August feeder cattle at $137.17½, down 245. The September down 225. And lean hogs for the day at $86.15, 92½ cents lower. Energy markets at this hour: crude oil up $1.80, ethanol $0.01½ higher, gasoline up 4¾ cents. It's trading at $1.50¼, and heating oil or diesel fuel now 5¹¹ higher at $1.48¹. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 17th day of June. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, joins us. It's all about the weather, but let's start with the hot, hot, hot where you are. What kind of conditions there?
Well, we're running 93 right now, actual temperature, Todd, and feeling like 107, and we feel like we have it lucky here on the Missouri River. Go a couple hours west of Manhattan, and they're 101 actual with a heat index of nearly 120. And it's been this way, I would say, for the better part of a week, week and a half, and very reminiscent of 2012. And I'd say the drought monitor that was updated this week is showing a lot more droughty conditions from Atchison to Hall, Illinois, Hannibal, Missouri, Mississippi River. And I remember that very vividly because that was the year that we moved out here. And so it looks like it's setting up very similarly. I would say the APHIS precip maps, the 7-14-day maps of normal precip, would put Atchison up to Omaha, probably right at the heart of the drought of the Corn Belt. And we're about a little over two hours from Omaha, almost directly north of us. So I think that's the area to watch. The European model is promoting that drought expanding north into Nebraska and east in across the Iowa border. The GFS model is not giving us that. In fact, they're giving us rains in the next 1 to 5 days for those really significantly parched areas. So that's kind of the battle lines and where we're set up. It was an interesting week because we had to do some house keeping on the global macro front with the federal rate decision and the correction in the crude oil. So we did that early on before we could start preparing for this 2012 style drought potential, but I think next week will be more of the same, except maybe we flip it around where we trade weather early and then we come back around and trade the global macro because of the EU referendum vote that's slated for Thursday, and see whether Great Britain leaves the European Union, whether that sinks the pound and that sinks the euro, and that brings the dollar into a big safe haven buy situation.
And there's all kinds of things happening. We'll talk about those in just a bit. In Chicago, though, today, futures rallied pretty sharply. They were higher a good portion of the day, but it wasn't until later in the session that they really managed to pick up some steam. Was that a weather-related rally and just making sure they had themselves in place before they went home for the weekend?
I think it was additional short covering, because I actually did the midday fill-in for Sue and was talking that I thought that the wheat would actually back down going into the close, because the GFS midday model actually stayed wet, and it stays cooler, a lot cooler than the European model. But instead, we saw the wheat kind of take hold with the corn. And typically, when we've seen that, it's probably some shorts in the market, fund shorts that are wanting to cover before the weekend. One thing that had caught my eye earlier in the day, but I didn't think it meant too much because we're in the middle of this weather, is we are starting to see cash basis pop around here. Elevators, commercials, both, you know, domestically and I would say at the Gulf. So international buyers are all getting a little bit more nervous about this weather pattern. So I would say it's probably short covering, maybe related to that.
Is it too early for them to get nervous?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you've got these crop conditions at 75% good to excellent in corn and 74% good to excellent in beans. I mean, that's 7% better in beans than we were last year at this time, and 2 points better than corn. And if those are the best we get the rest of the year, I think the trade's pretty much on target. The only thing I would say, and this is something I talked to the clients about on a video earlier this week, was if we're going to compare this to 2012, I can compare it in price action in terms of how the market moves based upon date. But I don't want to set the stage for actual prices to be hit this year similar to 2012, because we literally have double the U.S. carryover of corn and beans right now going into 2016 than we had in 2011 going into 2012. So we got to be cognizant of that. There is an excess supply out there compared to the carry-in of 2011.
What are you thinking about the acreage numbers at the end of the month? And of course, we can bring the grain stocks in too.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing I think the trade did deal with again this week, along with the Federal Reserve decision and the crude oil sell-off. I think we really got a good handle in the trade and priced into the trade bigger bean acres, smaller corn acres. I think that's mainly due to the chief economist at USDA over in London at the on the sidelines of the International Grain Conference, suggesting that we would have a marginal shift. So now the bean-corn ratio in new crops down to 2.56. That's near the May low. The May low was near a multi-month low. So I think we will have factored in bigger bean acres, smaller corn acres by the time we get to the June 30th numbers. And then after that, and maybe a little bit before that, we'll have to start dealing with yield, depending on what those crop conditions say. I would say unequivocally, other than this Brexit vote, I think these crop conditions Monday are going to be the number one factor to watch for the trading week. The harder they drop in good to excellent, the more nervous the shorts will be, I think, in the fund community.
We are in the midst of harvest for wheat. It looks like it's a crop, a big one and a good one.
Yeah, it does look like it's really good. Test weights are really high in the hard red wheat. You know, we're even going to be early. It sounded like, talked to a client near Vetersburg, Indiana, just yesterday, and he said we're probably going to run about 10 days earlier than normal, the way it looks. So, yeah, we're probably about 50% done in the hard red wheat, getting ready to do the soft red wheat. People out west, like in Hutchinson, Salina area, where the hard red wheat country is, they're talking about a third more grain than last year, maybe as much as 50% more than 2014. So, and it's nice to have the good test weights, because that means that it's less likely the wheat's going to compete with the corn as a feed grain. And I think this all sets us up if we're harvesting early and we're getting into a more droughty situation. And I think the one of the big consultants over in Europe also lowered some of the French crop potential and German crop potential. I think this all lines up with the idea that wheat will be a lot more supportive factor than it was last year and more than it was in 2014 for the corn market.
As is typical, when grains rally, the livestock struggle just a bit.
Yeah, and I think this is mainly fund-driven. And I say that because we've had a very good grilling summer. I say that because the funds have been very active in the spread trade between hogs and cattle. I say that because the cattle index, the feeder cattle index, is well above the actual August feeders. You've got some spread trade going on right now in terms of box beef prices compared to lead month fat cattle futures, Todd. They're the highest they've been ever since 2000, and that's as far back as my records go. So I think the cash is very well supported here. I think this is mainly about paper, mainly about the currencies, and as you say, about the grains, especially that corn feeder mix.
Any final thoughts before I let you go for the afternoon?
I would say, again, the model that I would be working from after the crop conditions come out is if it's a bullish crop conditions number and we stay hot and dry and the European model is correct, we probably go up into midweek. But then we have to really watch whether we see kind of a black swan event. If Britain leaves the European Union, we see the British pound sink. Does that spur the talk that the European Union is going to have to break up? And does that mean the euro currency is no longer valid? Now, I'm not predicting that. This kind of goes back to the bean conversation we had many months back on Commodity Week. It's something to point out and be watchful of and be very, very cautious of. If we see sharply higher dollar, sharply lower crude oil, sharply higher gold market, that's going to send a lot of mixed signals to the commodities. And my take is follow the crude oil. If the crude oil goes sharply lower, be nervous that the market is going to sell off in the commodity sector and maybe get some bean puts bought for the harvest time period, especially if you're dry, don't sell any cash.
Do we have any good, solid answers as to which direction things might move if the UK votes to exit the European Union?
I don't think we have as good a conditions as we need in the global economy. That's what worries me. But by the same token, you know, Great Britain is not part of the European Monetary Union, the EMU. And so it may not make any difference at all to the actual currency trade. But I have to say, I received from my risk department at Straits for the first time, probably in three or four times since I've been working with them, a special alert talking about the gold and the currencies and the Brexit and how the volatility may hit us. And the VIX is starting to hit 20%. So when you start to see stuff like that, you do start to make clients aware that this could come in out of nowhere and really kind of cause a temporary train wreck. And if it's going to hit something hard, it probably will hit the crude oil, and that'll translate into the soy complex.
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure, sir. Happy Father's Day to you and all the listeners out there.
Same to you. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, a new bid by Senate Republicans to defund the Environmental Protection Agency's controversial Waters of the U.S. rule survived a challenge by Democrats this week. Senate appropriators blocked on a party-line vote a Democrat amendment to strip GOP riders to an interior EPA spending bill, including a rider to defund WOTUS. Amendment author Todd Udall of New Mexico says Congress should not intervene.
The courts are currently reviewing EPA's Clean Water Rule. Many of us are confident that the rule will prevail on its merits. We should not be intervening in the judicial process.
Subcommittee Chair Republican Lisa Murkowski of Alaska argued the regulation is burdensome.
In my state of Alaska, I can tell you, it has been called a showstopper of a regulation in Alaska. When we have so much of our state that is basically defined as wetlands or permafrost, we are in a position that effectively any level of development that might move forward, and I'm not talking about big projects, I'm talking about somebody that might want to put a longer driveway up to their home, they would be held back by this interpretation of Waters of the United States.
Co-sponsoring the amendment, Democrat Dick Durbin of Illinois told Murkowski the riders on the spending bill have little chance of further movement.
I think you may have reached a tipping point here with these 12 riders that you put in here. I believe that it's quite likely this bill will never be considered on the floor because of these riders. It is unlikely that you'll have cloture on a motion to proceed to this bill because of these.
The Senate turned back another EPA WOTUS defunding measure in April that failed to gain the needed 60 votes to advance. The House has passed numerous WOTUS defunding provisions. The federal courts, meanwhile, have prevented WOTUS from taking effect. That until a final court ruling is made in the lawsuits brought by states, farm groups, and others. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., the Coalition for Safe, Affordable Food is urging Congress to reach an agreement quickly on GMO labeling. The coalition called on Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Pat Roberts and Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow to come to an agreement on legislation to set a national standard for the labeling of food products containing biotechnology. Roberts and Stabenow have now indicated that they continue to make progress toward a solution. However, only a handful of legislative working days remain before the Vermont Law's July 1st deadline. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media this Friday afternoon. Stay with us for Commodity Week in the second half hour of our program, or pick it up online. We'll talk about Brexit. Yep, that's right. The European Union and UK's potential exit from it. In Commodity Week coming up soon. Right now, let's take up the weather forecast, though. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's with Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks so much for being along today. Tell me about the weather forecast, maybe that we've just had, and what we're looking for over the next 10 days or so.
Sure, yeah. So we've had quite a bit of heat in the last 7 to 10 days. Thankfully, that subsided yesterday and today. But you know what? The heat's going to build again Saturday through Monday. We're talking upper 80s, maybe even some lower 90s here, and hotter in the plains. But around Monday evening, maybe Tuesday morning, a weak cold front tries to cut across the Corn Belt kind of from east to west. It's going to help to drop the temperatures in the Midwest and the eastern part of the Corn Belt, you know, Tuesday through maybe the end of the week, maybe towards Friday. At the same time, pretty large trough in the jet stream is going to be moving over the eastern half of the country. That's what's going to help us return to these kind of near normal temperatures. So we're talking lower to middle 80s rather than the 90s, which we've been seeing. Now, the thing I'm kind of keeping an eye on, though, is to the west. Heat is starting to build. To the south, heat is starting to build. And a large ridge is forming out west. So we're expecting some triple-digit heat through the western and northern plains through parts of next week. Now, this is going to try to move east as the week progresses, which is going to help us to return to these warmer temperatures by next weekend. But I got to be honest, I'm watching that ridge very, very closely, because as it migrates, as it moves, as it strengthens, it could really do a lot to impact our late June and July temperatures.
And then if you take a look at the forecast models, the U.S. and the European model, what do they tell us?
Yeah, so I'm focusing right now a lot on the ECMWF, which is the European equivalent of our GFS model. A lot of your listeners probably know what the GFS is. Here's the thing. It's been performing better than the GFS recently. It has been warmer than the GFS has been recently. And as a result of that, actually getting the temperatures more correct, it's also staying warmer through the next 15 days. So one of the things I'm seeing, though, is that in the ECMWF, we're expecting the jet stream to go more zonal by the end of June. Now, that simply means that the airflow in the jet stream, instead of being in big ridges and troughs, is kind of in a ridgy pattern out west, but then gets kind of straight west to east across the eastern half of the country. Now, what that means is there's not going to be any real massive surges of heat, but it also means the odds of it being cool around here is very low. Now, we can look even farther than that with the ECMWF models. We need to start looking into July. And when I start to look into July, this is what I see. I don't see any indication of it being a cool down at all in July. I see that heat is going to be focused in the Great Plains and the western parts of the Midwest. That's western Corn Belt, and maybe even migrating more toward the center part of the Corn Belt. And we know this. We know that our best corn yield years have cool Julys. Think 2014, 2015. We had highs in the upper 70s. The probability of that happening this year is very low. Now, as of this point, I'm not forecasting the triple-digit heat, but I am forecasting the probability of a high probability of being in the 90s, the low 90s, maybe mid-90s, quite a bit through July. Now, let's turn our focus really quickly here at the end to talk about precipitation. Last 7 days, it's been all about these thunderstorm complexes, right? So if you've been near one, you've been getting lots of rain. But if you've been missed, like parts of Missouri, parts of western Illinois, and parts of Iowa and Ohio, well, then you've gone quite a few days without a lot of precipitation. But parts of Illinois, like northern Illinois and Indiana, have received quite a bit. So here's the quick forecast. High pressure dominates over the east in the short term. And that basically kind of starts things off dry. weak low pressure system skirts along the northern part of the U.S., kind of the U.S.-Canadian border this weekend, early next week, but that precip stays in the northern Corn Belt. Then, when the cold front tries to come through Monday night, Tuesday morning, it will try to bring some precipitation through our area here in Illinois, through parts of the Corn Belt, kind of a from an east to west trajectory, but it's going to be scattered and maybe thunderstorm-like, which means some places are going to get missed again. So when you take a step back and say, what are the next 10 days look like? I'm not seeing any major organized weather systems moving through the Corn Belt that are going to drop a lot of precipitation. Thankfully, we're not in any sort of serious drought at this point, which means that if we do go a 10-day stretch where it's dry, drier than average, it's not going to be as, you know, detrimental on the crop as it could have been. So we're seeing some heat. We're seeing maybe some precipitation stresses. You know, that might work to kind of knock yields back a little bit, but we are not talking about a revisit to 2012.
Sounds like something to watch in the future. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today, Eric.
Thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible from right here in Champaign County and helps us wrap up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do pick us up online at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.